Each of the supremely enlightened Buddhas spent an extremely long time accumulating their parami, spiritual perfections, before they could attain to supreme enlightenment. And the Buddhas who have already attained enlightenment, it is said, are more numerous than the grains of sand in the Ganges River. The Ganges River is vast and immense, so how many grains of sand are there? It's beyond count. But as for the minds of all of us, whether monastics or lay people, they still drift about, dying and being reborn again into this very life. If we do not hurry to practice, the cycle will continue into the next life, and it will never come to an end. The Buddha said that, looking with his supreme knowledge, he saw that the rounds of rebirth of our minds, if we don't practice and are still deluded, will never have an end. Reflecting back on past lives, the Buddha recalled that they truly had no beginning. They went on and on in this way. Therefore, if we want to bring it to an end, we must train in Dhamma practice, cultivate goodness, develop generosity, morality, and meditation. Through giving, in one aspect, we're cultivating self-sacrifice, and at the highest level, we abandon greed. By keeping precepts, we abandon greed and abandon anger. And when thoughts still arise in the mind, we develop samadhi, concentration, restraining the heart so it doesn't fabricate in terms of hatred, ill will, greed, or covetousness, no longer following these things. To make the mind still and peaceful, this is rather difficult because in the past we've never trained in it. Therefore, it is difficult. But if from today we persevere, practicing without stopping, then in 3 months, 6 months, a year, we will see results. Our hearts will become cooler and true serenity will arise. In the past, there was only the burning heat of fire. The fire of greed was hot. The fire of anger was hot. The fire of lust was hot. The fire of delusion was hot. Once they arose, they burned. When they arose, they came quickly and with great intensity, but they also ceased quickly as well. Yet greed, sensual desire, is slow to cease, and for delusion it has both aspects. It fades slowly, it lingers long, and this delusion is a very great danger. But we who come to practice have self-sacrifice as our foundation, making merit, practicing generosity, giving of ourselves, building monasteries and halls in abundance. All of this belongs to the Buddha's dispensation. It's not the possession of any individual, but of the Buddha. And what belongs to the Buddha is emptiness. What we seek is emptiness, purity. We offer it up as an offering to the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. It does not belong to any particular person, not to this monk or that monk. For those who come to practice diligently, training in the monasteries, it is for the development of the mind to rise higher and attain true peace. The mind can attain true peace only when it sees what is of danger and harm. This is called an Arya, a noble one. The word Arya means being far from enemies. And what enemies? We can see enemies as the hostile forces in the human world, waging wars and opposing one another. It's all turmoil, isn't it? Chaos. But for human beings, what are our true enemies? They are old age, sickness, and death. These are indeed our enemies, always oppressing our bodies. One moment it is this sickness, another moment that sickness, sometimes severe, sometimes mild. Some it even takes our very lives. Sicknesses that oppress our lives are great enemies indeed. But if we practice, we can strive to distance ourselves inwardly from this enemy. The further we distance ourselves from this enemy, the more we approach peace, clarity, freedom from danger, and the ending of defilements, Nibbana itself. Therefore, this peaceful mind is a state of mind free of defilements, free of any bonds or fetters lingering in the heart, if it is the highest peace. The bonds that tie beings to the various realms of existence are like a rope of four strands. They are cut apart when the mind becomes free and liberated, like a bird released from its cage. It's no longer obstructed, no longer confined, only true happiness remains. Such is the way it is. We have surely seen birds in cages. Venerable Ajahn Chah said, yes, they are in cages, whether made out of wood, out of silver, or out of gold. Whatever the material, the birds are still in a cage. Likewise, people in this world, even if they have great wealth, high status, praise, and pleasures, are still confined within a cage, are still bound to the world. They must grow old, they must get sick, they must die. They lack true freedom. And we don't even know what freedom is, because from birth we've always been in the cage. When we make the mind still and calm, we begin to see that this freedom is possible. Before, why was it always so agitated? When the mind grows still, we see its value. Its value is vast and immeasurable. It fills the heart with contentment and joy. The mind no longer feels disturbed. When defilements arise, lust, anger, delusion, oh, they cause such great disturbance. They dominate and agitate our minds, and then we see clearly the harm they bring. When we see the harm and danger, we then begin training in samadhi concentration. As soon as concentration is developed, the mind becomes radiant, bright, filled with joy and rapture. It smiles. One can be alone and be so joyful, because rapture has arisen. For some people it arises strongly, lasting many days and nights. They feel so full of joy that they do not even want to eat. The heart is utterly satisfied to that extent. So we may have heard that those of very high jhanas, meditative absorptions, can live without food, because they abide in the bliss of Dhamma, their hearts utterly fulfilled, like the Brahmas, able to live on for a long time. So we must train our minds to grow peaceful. Only then will we see the value of concentration and see the harm of a mind caught in turmoil. What we truly seek is genuine peace, that is, a mind that has come to stillness. But as for us, we have not yet reached Nibbana. What should we do? We must keep practicing, learning little by little, letting Nibbana seep gradually into our hearts until emptiness arises within. We then begin to see and to recognize, and the mind gradually breaks free from the bonds, those things that fetter and bind our hearts, little by little. When speaking of the Arahant, such a one is liberated from the four kinds of bondage, completely severed. That means they have abandoned Kama Yoga, abandoned the sensual delight in material things, both that have life and inanimate objects, and have let go of all forms, sounds, smells, tastes, and tactile sensations. Even if they could rise to higher realms of existence, they no longer want them, for all are suffering, all are impermanent. They have abandoned attachment to views and delight in existence. In terms of right view and the conduct in line with the principles of the Dhamma, they are fully complete. They have abandoned delight and abandoned all wrong views. The crucial point is ignorance. All forms of ignorance, of not knowing, they have come to know and see truly as they are. The Buddha was the very first to know and to see for himself, and the Arahants awakened following after him. The great masters, Venerable Ajahn Mun, Venerable Ajahn Chah, also awakened following after. Before them were the great disciples, the noble disciples, the 80 great disciples, the Arahants, Venerable Mahakasapa, Venerable Ananda. They had gained that knowing, attained awakening. There are those who have practiced according to the Dhamma of the Buddha, as the Buddha himself taught. The Dhamma is his representative, not the Sangha. But those who practice in line with the Dhamma will realize and see the Dhamma. This, then, is what we ourselves must come and practice. When our minds have not yet reached the highest level, then we are just at whatever stage we're at. So we try every day, uplifting the mind with joy, and we will see the mind progressing step by step. The mind that once struggled with so many problems in the mind will gradually improve, becoming refreshed and uplifted. The mind that was once full of sorrow, sadness and loneliness, lacking brightness, will likewise improve step by step. Therefore, the Dhamma can heal. It heals our hearts, so they do not wither or dry up like leaves in the hot season that will shrivel and fall, or like earth that cracks in drought. We can make our minds moist and refreshed through goodness, through generosity, morality, and meditation. And it's simple too. When others have good fortune, rejoice. When others gain wealth or status, that means they must have merit, right? Sometimes a person rises to a higher position, or someone in public affairs gains office, then we rejoice with everyone. Whoever does good, we rejoice and say sadhu. As for those who fall into misfortune, we don't add to their suffering. This is what we call training our own hearts. Have loving kindness towards yourself and towards others. With compassion, think of helping those who are suffering, but only according to your ability, not excessively. It's not that we have loving kindness, but don't have equanimity. Venerable Ajahn Chah once gave a teaching on this. He said, we like to release fish, and that is good. But if we release all the fish in the district of Warren's market, there are still more at other markets, in other districts. If we buy up and release all the fish in one district, there are more in another. Even if all the fish in the Ubon province are released, there are still other provinces. Even if all throughout Thailand are released, there are still fish abroad. So how can we possibly release them all? We can't. We should do only as much as we can, according to our strength. Even though we may feel compassion and kindness, we cannot save the lives of all beings. Beings follow their karma, their merit and demerit. So we must learn to practice with balance and moderation. Or sometimes, Venerable Ajahn Chah would teach in a way that wisdom would arise. Once, someone wanted him to release birds. I accompanied Ajahn Chah to Wat Prabhudabhat Temple in Saraparee province. I saw people bringing birds to sell to him. They thought, the monks are kind-hearted, aren't they? They usually release fish. And I was a monk, a true monk, and so I felt like I wanted to release the birds that day. My heart felt joyful, uplifted, and I wanted to set living beings free. Then at that moment, Ajahn Chah said, "Well then, whoever caught them, let that person release them." Ah, that was profoundly deep. That day I felt disappointed. Disappointed that I didn't get to release the birds, because Ajahn Chah himself didn't release them. I reflected on it. Whoever caught them, let that person release them. This was his teaching. He was teaching the catcher himself to reflect further. Because if we buy them today and release them, those birds have been raised and will soon return to their former owner, back into a cage, to eat the food given to them. They will be taken and sold again. It doesn't end. Or else people will keep catching more birds to sell for release, turning it into a trade. It never comes to an end. That is why Ajahn Chah was teaching directly to those who caught the birds, so that they themselves might learn to release life. Because Ajahn Chah himself had already released everything. He had already released completely. He did not harm the lives of living beings. He had let go of everything, both rupa and nama, material and mental phenomena. What more was there for him to release? He had already let go to the point of full realization. So his teaching was through the Dhamma itself. This example shows us to have metta, loving kindness, to have compassion, and then to train our hearts to also keep sympathetic joy and equanimity. Keep precepts firmly, practice meditation, develop the meditation object, and cultivate the mind. This is how we should conduct ourselves in our daily lives. Whatever comes to impact us into our field of experience, we must maintain sati, mindfulness, and sampajanya, clear comprehension. Whether we are praised or criticized, we try to train the mind not to be shaken. Sometimes we can do it, sometimes not, but we keep training continuously. In daily life, we inevitably meet all kinds of things, sense experiences. We may enjoy sports or take interest in social and political affairs, and so there will always arise things we like and things we don't like. This is because there is a sense of me, mine, my team, my group, my party, and so forth. So we must understand that this is simply nature. It is the natural way, arising, persisting, and passing away. Do not cling to anything. Do not let the mind suffer because of it. When the mind is happy, know it. When the mind is sad, know it. When the mind is shaken, know it. But do not let it become so overwhelming that it damages our hearts and minds. Whatever thing may be lost, let it be lost, but don't lose the mind. The mind is what is most important. Guard the mind, train the mind. This mind is chief, this mind is the leader. If we are to reach true peace and happiness, then we must train the mind. Therefore, the highest blessing is not wealth or riches. The Buddha never spoke of wealth or riches as a blessing. Instead, he taught about work that is not left unfinished. To have work that is not left undone, doing it with mindfulness and wisdom, is itself a blessing. From that, wealth and possessions will follow. But most importantly, the heart must be calm and steady, reaching inwardly into the depths of the mind. So in countries where the Buddha's teaching is present, we can see that people have kindness and consideration in their hearts constantly. This too is a matter of merit and spiritual accumulations, arising together with a heart of self-sacrifice. Building monasteries and temples here in Thailand, we have all devoted ourselves greatly to this work. And who do they belong to? They belong to the Buddha's dispensation. They are public property for the benefit of all. Those who come to practice within them are devotees. Some practice well, some not so well, some to a greater degree, some to a lesser degree. Both the lay followers and the ordained Sangha must train and practice, so that being a devotee may give rise to true Dhamma in the heart. Then the mind will encounter peace and true happiness. This is the great blessing of life. So I invite all the laity, every one of you, as well as all the monks, to diligently train and cultivate the mind, so that it will not be shaken, so that it will be free from all the defilements. Then the mind will not be shaken by worldly conditions. The mind will not grieve, will not be sorrowful, will not wither. It won't dry up. The more you take away the dust in your hearts, the more you encounter true peace and happiness. As the Buddha taught, this very mind is luminous. When we train the mind well, with knowledge and understanding, it can be freed from its bonds, and we can meet with true peace and happiness, with Dhamma dwelling in the heart. Therefore, it is through the true Dhamma that people are transformed. Whether one is a monk by convention or a layperson, one can become a true venerable one. It arises out of the true Dhamma. If there were no true Dhamma, and there was only that which is not Dhamma, then it would only bring more confusion and suffering. So I encourage all of you to sincerely train and cultivate yourselves, for our lives are precious, and the time we have left in this world is short. Therefore, may each of you set your hearts on this. May you grow in blessings.